This podcast is part of the Everyday Heroes Podcast Network, the network for first responders and those who support them.
Hey guys, welcome to the Hero Academy podcast, the place where you can celebrate and highlight our frontline heroes. People such as nurses, firemen, EMS, police officers, and military are all heroes without capes. I don't care about politics, only positivity and purpose. I only care about those that have chosen to serve our society. I believe in collaboration over competition. Here, you'll learn the secrets and strategies that let ordinary people become extraordinary inside of their purpose. Sometimes we'll throw in some simple side hustles that everyday regular people are doing, things that you could do to make some extra money, especially if you're starting to think about retirement and what's next. Inside this podcast, each week you'll learn from people like you that were working full time but still found the time to create a course, grow a big team, create a coaching program, a large audience, or a profitable side hustle. The steps they took, their backstories, and how they overcame their burnout that they were facing. The perfect blend of mindset and techniques. Carpe diem. Now let's get your dream lit for your freedom. I'm your host and coach, Super Dave. Let's go.
So it's more of a conversation than it is a interview, just sure. So you know. And it's so funny how people's demeanors change when you hit record and they know like we're live. It's crazy. People stiffen up and they're like, all right, time to be professional. You don't have to be professional. Your career speaks for itself. Thank you for your service, brother.
Thank you for your service also. And
I'm still active duty. You're retired?
I am retired March of 2020. I had heart trouble and cardiac arrhythmia. The doctor said it's time to step away. So I wrote the book and been going on podcasts and pivoted to a little bit of self-help writing Oneness Magazine.
I got awesome.
Got a pretty big article here. And then believe it or not, I'm writing a little bit for Heart of Hollywood Magazine occasionally. I interview people, celebrities, and write interviews on that. I also do all kinds of advertising marketing for people and network with people whenever they need me to.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah, we definitely have to collaborate on something because I could use your talents. I know there's a way. And I definitely want to promote the book To Die a Hero by Joseph Patrick Fair.
Yeah, it's self-published on Amazon. I can send you a link after we're off here. I got your email. And it would be great if you put that in there. And yes, and if you want to write a book someday, let me know.
Well, I've actually written two. And okay. I have a whole series in mind. I'm going to do at least five. I'm just going to be a prolific writer. That's the plan. How many have you written?
I wrote two books. The first book was Life and Death in Small Town America. I had a series of experiences, one of which was post-traumatic stress disorder, and I wanted to write the book on that. And then when I sat down with the writing coach, she said, you're probably better off just writing a police fiction book and then putting a chapter or two in. So the first book has got two chapters in there that explain post-traumatic stress, how it affects a person. Then the second book is a classic police fiction book about adventure and the things we see out there. Answering 911 calls is the most incredible job you could have. It never leaves you wondering, you know, what am I going to see the next day? What car accident, something on fire, very, very interesting.
I heard a study that first responders are 4 times or maybe 10 times more exposed to traumatic events than the average person. Because if you think about it, like you're dealing with traumatic things on a sometimes on a daily basis. What state were you working in?
I was in Michigan, Southwest Michigan, and a pretty rural police department, and a great bunch of people from the chief all the way down. And often we had a shift where we got no 911 calls, just a couple traffic stops. Then we'd shoot down the firehouse, visit with those guys, over to the ambulance company, up to the hospital, by a few of the key people in town that had businesses. So it was actually more of a public relations type of police job that I did than you were in a big city or something. I've listened to a couple of your podcasts.
Yeah, I'm in a, I was in New York City for 5 months, and then I left that academy with like a month and a half to go. And then I joined my local county, which has like 2.5 million people in the county. So it is a suburb, but it's a very populous suburb. And my department has like 2,500 or 2,400 sworn members. It's one of the largest in the country. Did you know that most departments, like greater than 50%, have under 2 dozen people?
I didn't know that. We had a dozen people, counting the chief and the lieutenant. And three cars, cruisers, and just a small department, and we ran like 1,400 911 calls a year, and a lot of public relations, and a lot of making the people in the community feel like they're protected. And the guy I worked with, often we were both trained as firefighters, so occasionally it'd be a slow day, we would monitor the fire channel and do traffic control for a fire call or something, stand out there. So a lot of parades, a little town, a lot of public relations, a lot of going to businesses, helping them with security. Your job was probably a lot more 911 calls, shots fired, and all that type of stuff.
So it was, I worked midnights for 6 years, and then I got into this public relations unit. It's called Community Oriented Police Enforcement, COPE. And I spent 10 years in that unit because it was so good. We did a lot of meetings, similar to what you did. We did a lot of fairs and parades. And when we weren't doing that, we were doing enforcement. So it was a really, really good unit because it was either shaking hands and kissing babies, or it was just going out and, you know, being proactive, but without the pressure of having to answer the radio, but you could assist and show up to things. So you were still a cop in uniform, but you didn't have to necessarily go get the calls and get the radio, you know.
That sounds like the best of both worlds. When we got a new chief, I was a little bit put out by this, but he wanted us to canvas neighborhoods and actually knock on people's doors, hand out business cards, ask them what their concerns were, fill out a form at the police department, which went into a database. And I would say 80% of the people you knock on the door are pretty friendly. 20% are a little surprised. It was a neat experience. Often we got called to another department that was adjacent to ours that had much more population density. So we would run up there, back them up on a call. The sheriff's department came out toward our jurisdiction. Often we ran to back up the sheriff's department if it was in the south end of the county. So it was a very interesting mix of the police work I did, but nothing like a big city or anything. We had idle time, occasionally 3 hours, 4 hours, where, you know, we run to a restaurant, have a meal and chat, tell a story, and
that's awesome. One
call will pop up. But yeah, I loved it, loved helping people. And over the period of doing firework and police work, started around 92 and was done in 20. So I had over 25 years of part-time police and fire. I wrote in a binder, I wrote all kinds of ideas down over that 25 year period. And then I went to sit down and write the book, I wasn't stumbling. I was typing away. And then I realized that it was a series of a whole bunch of short stories. and I had to hire a book coach to weave it together, which she did genius. I have to give her credit. Susan took something that was just jumbled. All the pieces were there, but it had to be cemented together. She did that and came up with a great book. So, yeah, I'm glad that I knew when I was midway through, I better write down ideas and have some material so when I retire, I have a good book.
Are you familiar with Joseph Campbell, The Hero's Journey? Hero with a Thousand Faces?
That's exactly the formula that she talked me into using for this book. And it's got three acts. And at the close of the second act is a thing that happened around my area. It didn't happen to me, but I repurposed it because, you know,
I was going to say, don't spoil the ending of the book.
You hear a good story and you're out there on the street, you hear a good story and you say, wow, is that unique? And boy, would that have a lot of public relations, and it would also have a lot of personal interest. And then that actually is the close of the second act. And then the third act is, you know, you've got to fix the cliffhanger, which is the third act of the book. And yes, loved it. Loved doing it. Loved writing the book. Now that I'm retired, I'm enjoying going on, meeting people, networking with all kinds of people. I'm amazed to find out after I meet somebody on a podcast how we can help each other. I could get you on a podcast if you want. You probably get me on a few. And I noticed on YouTube you were on a lot of podcasts. You've been on how many other ones have you been on?
Well, my goal was to do one a week. I've only done a few, maybe a dozen or so. But my goal is to speak on one podcast a week because it's just an easy way to put yourself out there. It's easier said than done when you're still working full time. Because like last night I got held over a couple of hours on a guy that stole a Bud Light truck, and then he painted it all black and he still had the paint can with him. So he went to Lowe's, stole a can of black paint, used a roller to paint over the Bud Light, and then he had planned on living in it, but he didn't realize they had a GPS tracker on the truck.
Yeah.
So he did disable the interior cameras once he realized that he was on camera and they had his face, but he deleted, and those videos go to the cloud, so he deleted, you know, he killed the camera a little bit too late. But the cops found him in the car. They found him kind of late at night, so I ended up having to stay over 2 hours, and then I didn't wake up today until about 10:30. And it doesn't matter what time I wake up, my first thing on my mind is I'm going to the gym. So I knew I had this at 1300 my time. And I said, even if I only do a quick 30 minutes, I'm going to do it. Number one. And number two, when I'm short on time, then I just do the major body parts. I push, pull, press legs. So I do leg press. I do some pull-ups and I'll do push-ups or some kind of seated press, and I just knock them out. And I got a really, really good workout in today. Do you still take walks
occasionally? I still walk. I get the gym like 2 days a week. I was there yesterday. I pretty much lightweight on machines. I do reps.
Yeah, me too.
I was actually in good shape about 30 years ago. I'm not such good shape now, but yeah, I get to Planet Fitness. They give me a free membership awesome. Twice a week, and then I try to walk 2 other days, try to go 5 to 6 miles walking. With my current health, that's about what my doctor will let me do. But yeah,
you said before we went live, yeah, the reason why your voice sounds like RFK a little bit.
Yeah, it's I have a little swelling in my thyroid, which is pushing on my vocal cord. And yeah, if RFK has spasmodic dysphonia or something.
Yeah, like his is worse. His is worse. But I mean, he makes a lot of he makes a lot of good points, but I don't see him ever being able to debate anyone with that, with the way his voice is. It's so like you have to really strain to listen to him.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I saw that he was talking about Big Pharma and some stuff that really needs to be spoken about, but it's really hard for the average person to get past that voice thing.
Yeah.
You think of somebody who becomes really popular in politics. They usually are very savvy and their voice is very clear.
Yes.
And super good. All of it's there in his mind, but it doesn't sound right when it comes out of that disability, basically.
Yeah.
Which, if he could get that voice to sound a little more like JFK, his uncle, you know, he would, he'd be president before you know it.
I also like, I'm going into politics here, and I try to stay away from politics because the reason why I stay away from politics is because not just because it's so divisive, but also because it really doesn't help us to build generational wealth to focus on those things. The only thing that does is your personal actions, you writing books, you going out and doing your own promotion of yourself and creating things of value for people. That's the only thing that actually creates wealth for your family. And that's the only thing that you really have control over. Who's the governor of Florida? I'm drawing a blank right now. You know who I'm talking about.
I know exactly. You're talking about DeSantis.
DeSantis. Yeah, Ron DeSantis. It's Ron, right? I think it's Ron.
Ron DeSantis. And he did well when the hurricane came in. And you could tell he's a smart guy. He could fix a lot of stuff. But you don't know what type of president he would be.
I like some of the common sense things that he said, like if you can't get a tattoo before you know, without your parents' permission before you turn 18, then why should you be allowed to you know, do other things to yourself before you turn 18? Like, it's just common sense to me.
And like you, I've studied politics, and I've realized this thing, the older I get, that if you get too divisive and you get people fighting, it's really not good for anybody. It's not good for either side. It's not good for the country itself. Like you were saying, your personal actions and your decisions and your belief systems create your success in life, and those other things can drag you away from staying focused on your goals. And I could say in the book, this is embarrassing to admit, I've had 2 or 3 months during the process of writing the book where I got sidetracked. It's easy to turn on the TV and watch CNN or Fox. It doesn't matter which one you're watching. And you're distracted from your goals. You're not.
Oh, they suck. They suck you in and they get you fired up. They get you fired up and they suck you in. And then you keep turning on to get that little bit of dopamine and a little bit of anger. Like, can you believe what this person said? Can you believe what that person said? And none of that helps you move forward in your own personal success. I'm a big believer in personal responsibility and, you know, personal development. One of my first mentors was Bob Proctor.
Yeah, no, I've looked at all that material. I'm in the exact same boat. That when you get up in the morning and you write out a list, oh, wait a minute here, let's do some my little list today. Okay, you get up in the morning, you write out a list of stuff to do, and then when you see yourself sliding towards CNN, Facebook, occasionally LinkedIn, you go right back to the list. You catch yourself. That's like the whole secret to this thing. If you want to teach people to be successful, you catch yourself. You got to have the discipline to catch yourself. Okay, I've been on Facebook for 8 minutes. That's 7.5 minutes too long.
Yes.
Okay, I have to shut that off. I got to go back to the list. I got to write an email. I got to get in contact with somebody. I've got to get the ball rolling on my next project. You're completely right that the average person is getting pulled.
Yes.
100 ways, but they could have so much success, big side hustle, good money, all that stuff. But it's that taking responsibility.
My son told me he recently watched The Social Dilemma, and I haven't watched it myself. I know the gist of it, but I know it personally because I get sucked into the Instagram algorithm of being entertained. I liked a few meme pages, and now when I open it up, I'm getting hit with, because you like this one, you might like this one. And some of them make me laugh, and then I find myself swiping to the next one, swiping to the next one. And like you said, I'm like, I've been on here for now 15 minutes. So for me, it's Instagram. My assistant really handles my LinkedIn. He reaches out to people for me. And sometimes I do, that was me responding back and forth to you. But sometimes if I see that I have a message, then I respond back to the person. I don't really post much content on LinkedIn. I know that I have to start posting more. But for me, it's Instagram and my mobile game. I love playing chess, so I try to only do it at specific times. And I love playing another mobile game. It's called Age of Apes. So these three things are just eating up so much of my time. And I have to catch myself because I block out time to work. So, you know, like certain times, even in the gym, I have to catch myself when I'm on like a leg extension machine and I start scrolling, I'm like, oh no, it's not time for Instagram. It's time to work out. You know, I have to catch myself because they are so addicting.
Yes. I don't have the thing for the game, and I did away with TikTok. I could see that it was bad for me. And then I occasionally set a timer on my phone to go in and just look at social media. I'll glance at Instagram, that is probably the most dangerous one for me also. But I have way more people. I have 60,000 people on Facebook that follow me. So I have to be on there to at least keep up with that. And then I actually enjoy
60,000. Wow. God bless you, man.
Yeah. Worked really hard to get that. And part of it's the book and part of it is YouTube channel and whatnot. I've worked really hard to build all that platform. But yes,
do you also do you have an email list as well?
I have an email list and a website. I do coaching, author coaching. If you know anybody, I give the best possible deal on author coaching. I tell people, I will work with you. We'll write down goals. You give me a small retainer to get my skills. And you could pay me after we get your book published. And most people just jump right at that, because it's an unbelievable deal. Often to write a magazine article, something like that, I network with somebody and I'll say, hey, if you want a magazine article that's in your name, we'll just start a Google Doc and we'll just keep working on it. I'll go through my contacts. I'll find somebody, Hollywood, New York, somewhere. I'll send a copy. I just did this for a lady, got her published, and then you pay me afterwards. So if you know anybody looking to publish a magazine article, just let me know. It's could be all done remote, Zoom, Google Doc. I'll get it published. They can pay me afterwards.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to utilize that service. That sounds incredible. How do people find you if they're looking for you? What's the best way?
Yeah, the easiest place is to find me, Joseph Fair at Facebook, Joseph Fair at LinkedIn. Either place, I prefer messages on LinkedIn. Because Facebook can be problematic. But if you send me a message on LinkedIn, Joseph Fair or Joseph Patrick Fair on LinkedIn, I will get you connected to my website. You go to the website, put your information in. Once I got you my website, then I will send emails to you, get a Google Doc going. I have about a dozen of these projects going right now with people. It can take a little time. 90 days is probably a logical thing to start an article, write it, and then get it published, and then 99% of people send me money on PayPal or an app after I'm done. A few people say I'll pay you later, but 99% of people pay.
Do you have Venmo?
I got Venmo,
Cash App.
I can do any of those. And all right. It is great to get a don't let me start selling here. It is great to get a magazine article in your name. Like you, I would like to connect you to Heroes Media Group. Heroes Media Group is an incredible company.
I'm actually already a I'm already in the network, and
the network.
Yeah, it might have been it that might have been who connected me with you.
That might have been. And I wrote a post-traumatic stress disorder article for Heroes Network, and he's connected me with a ton of people and getting into that thing. If you want to write something for them, we should just get a shared Google Doc and we should write one together. And then I will send that into them, and I'll give you the top, and I'll take a byline.
All right. That's awesome. I'm always looking for ways to collaborate with people. In the beginning of my old intro, I don't know if I'm going to continue to use it because it's kind of long, but it says that I don't believe in competition, only collaboration, because I'm only really working against my liabilities. I'm only really working against myself. And like, how fast can I go out and produce? And like we were talking about social media before, I just look at that as consuming. And I really want to be a creator. Once I do retire, I'm just going to go all in on creating YouTube, creating content, creating podcasts. The only reason why I got into YouTube was so that I could host the podcast. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to fly out to Minnesota. Are you still in Minnesota, or did you move?
I'm in Michigan.
Michigan.
Yep.
It's all the same to me from New York.
Yeah. No, it's flyover country. And you could just bounce off Michigan and land in Minnesota. And there, it's just all farmland and same cornfields.
I would not go in the winter.
It's brutal here in the winter.
Only late summer, like maybe next August or September, I'll fly out to Michigan.
Yeah,
keep thinking Minnesota. MM, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi. Yeah. It's like I know Mississippi's in the south.
We're Lake Michigan, and I'm about 60 miles from it. In the wintertime, it just snows constantly. We have a snowstorm and the lake effect snowstorm and a regular snowstorm, and it just snows. The snow skiing is great here. I don't know if you ski, but boy, is it. It's, and if you have a snowmobile, this is a place to live because it just snow everywhere. But yes, keep going with your story.
So no, I was saying I want to fly out and then just like walk around the areas where you used to patrol and, you know, just do a walk and talk with you. And I think it would be awesome to meet you in person and just figure out what we can collaborate on. I love the title of your book, To Die a Hero. I'm going to keep saying it. To Die a Hero by Joseph Patrick Fair. Yeah. What is End of Watch number one?
End of Watch number one is I knew I'd probably write a 3-book series. The easiest way to market this thing is have a good title. And then End of Watch one is version one, End of Watch two, End of Watch three. Not to give the book away, but a real good book. Somebody's got to die in the end. Fiction. It's fiction.
Yeah.
To grip somebody, somebody's got to die at the end. So in theory, not to give the book away, somebody dies.
Don't give it away.
Dies at the end of one. And then there's a conclusion in two, right? And then somebody's got to die at the end of two. And there's a conclusion at three. But it's got to be all stitched together. But the idea that I've listened to enough of your podcasts, people with a servant's heart show up in this business, and we hope to have a good outcome. We hope to serve our community, save a lot of people's lives, help a lot of people that are in stress and difficulty, and go home at the end of it. And then the reality is some people don't go home. Some people have an end of watch, and they die here in Kalamazoo, Michigan. We had an end of watch 2 years ago. I didn't know this police officer, but two or three of my friends did. We've gotten a high-speed chase and a shootout at the end. He died in line of duty. So End of Watch is, in the book, is trying to explain that this is just part of the job. You hope for a good outcome, and there is always a possibility somebody will die.
Did you know that an officer dies in the U.S. almost every other day?
Every other day. There's been different numbers I've looked at. That 911 that year of 2001, really bad because of what happened in New York City. But you are right that police and fire, I remember the numbers when I went into it, they would say 365 days a year, it's probably going to lose 101 every other day on average per year.
Yeah, I get the text messages from Brotherhood for the Fallen.
Yes.
And, you know, it's almost a text every other day. Like, there's, you know, every state, they're losing one, they're losing one, they're losing one. And another really sad statistic is that more officers and firemen are dying by suicide than in the line of duty.
Yeah.
Which is a whole nother topic that, you know, it's why I believe in peer support.
Oh,
I strongly believe in peer support. And, you know, the peer support training is like some of the best training that I've been to in terms of dealing with mental health and just, you know, being there for someone in their time of need. One of the guys who was in the peer support class told the most hilarious, I'm going to see if he'll come on the podcast, but he told the most hilarious story about how a midnight sergeant came to his house. His ex-wife, who was clinically diagnosed as bipolar, said that he was putting noxious gases under her door to try and kill her. And the detective who told the story, he said, please, Sarge, come in and investigate this. I'm opening my front door. And the sergeant said, no, I'm not going to come in and investigate this because there may be noxious fumes in there. And he said, no, Sarge, there's no noxious fumes. And my son is sleeping in the next bedroom next door. There's no chemicals in the house. So the sergeant refused to go in. And the sergeant instructed the detective to bring down any weapons he had in the house. And the detective, I don't want to give away his story because it's so freaking funny when he tells it. But he said, he's like, so you think that I'm homicidal and I'm using noxious chemicals to kill my wife. And you think it's tactically sound for me to go inside and get my weapons to hand them to you. And then he turns to the junior cops that are there and says, guys, don't ever do that. don't ever tell someone who you think may be a threat to go inside and get their weapons. So then he says, he moves out of that house. He's in a bedroom apartment that's painted in West Indian colors, like Jamaican pink and blue. And he's sitting on like a beanbag chair, drinking alone. It's like 50 years old. And he's like, how did my life come to this? And he's like, and he said, there was no peer support there.
I believe that peer support is probably the most important thing. And working with a great bunch of guys that that support you, and then that critical stress debriefing. I worked for a fire department that was very progressive, and they didn't force us to go to that, but they motivated us to go down to the community room and talk. And it is really good because I'm not sure how many guys understand this. You go to sleep at night, if you're stressed, your mind never really goes into full rest. It never really gets to where it's supposed to. And then a guy like you and I, they're very responsible. We start beating ourselves up because our performance is low. And then we think, what the hell is going on here? I care. My performance is low. Maybe my sergeant is upset because I'm not getting reports in and whatnot. And it's just, it's that post-traumatic stress creeping in, and it's affecting somebody's performance. So proactively, That was the way that I tried to. I had a couple episodes of post-traumatic stress. I tried to get honest, proactively, get to a counselor, talk it through. And then hopefully you start sleeping properly. And then within a week of sleeping properly, somehow your mind kind of, it reframes the stress. And we put some distance between our identity and the event, and we feel much better. So if there's anybody out there struggling with that, get to a counselor, get your sleep, try to eat right, and realize it's part of the job.
I got to see if I can get BetterHelp as a sponsor, because I tell everyone about BetterHelp. Hey, hold on one second, okay? I got to run to the bathroom. I'll be right back. All right, so I'm back.
Yes. Yes, we were talking a little bit about
peer support and critical support
and get a good sponsor like that. To close my thought here, I would like to break that stigma that people have about going to talk to a counselor. It doesn't mean you're psychologically defective. It doesn't mean you're psychologically weak. You go to the gym to work your muscles, to stay strong. You brush your teeth to keep your dental hygiene. Sitting down to a counselor should be seen in the same way. In my case, after looking at my post-traumatic stress, I was completely capable of handling the calls. What I was incapable of doing was working a ton of overtime. I had worked 6 weeks, pretty much 60 to 65 hours in a row. Then I had a bad call. So I was sleep deprived when I went to that call, which was not a huge call, but it was a bad call. And when I put that together in counseling, that nobody probably who had worked that much overtime in a row would have responded well to domestic violence. And when I put that in perspective and I talked to the counselor, then my inner concerns about, am I ready to go back to patrol or not, was relieved. And I drew a boundary, 50 hours, 45, 50, no more overtime at that point. So it was actually a good thing that I had the episode. I found a boundary. I can't work 70 hours a week. I don't know anybody who can really consistently do that and be psychologically healthy.
Yeah, I know a couple of guys, midnight guys. They work four on, four off, and they were doing like 2,000 hours of overtime, 2,500 hours of overtime, just working around the clock. Because it was available, and it was like, and every single one of them looked completely shot. And I'm like, yeah, they're making an extra $100,000 a year, but they're sacrificing. And one guy who's really funny said, he's like, I know I'm taking years off of my life. And and I actually considered very, very briefly, I'm like, I would be insane to do that. But I actually considered giving up the gold shield as a detective to go back to midnights and work just for 3 or 4 years to make an extra 100K for 3 or 4 years. I'm like, man, I could do a lot with an extra 200K, you know. I think a better plan than killing yourself working ridiculous amounts of overtime is building something on the side that you can grow to a few $1,000s a month, you know, $10,000-$20,000 a month, something on the side that you can call your own. And I love that you're writing. It's such an important skill. You know, I can never remember his full name, Ravel Navikant. He's a Silicon Valley guy. He's a multimillionaire, and he was on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he said that, there's certain skills that it doesn't matter what AI is doing. Writing is one of them. Coding is another one. And being creative, creating things, whether that's creating entertainment or creating courses for people, just being a creator and being a producer of things, those skills will never, ever get old. And Even if everyone in the world became rich, you would still need people to create things to entertain you.
Yeah,
You would still need people to create art. You would still need people to create, you know, better coding for programs. You know, you would still need those people to do those things. And I also say with the servants, you know, the servant heart people, I don't see those jobs and those careers going anywhere in the next 100 years. You know, I don't see RoboCop. I don't see RoboCop becoming a reality.
AI will never fix that problem. You need people out there who have a creative mind that solves problems and ends up, what's the word I'm trying to think here, negotiating the difference between people and communicating to one and the other and getting people to get along. I don't think AI can do that. Speaking of AI, it will affect a lot of people's jobs, driving a truck, working in a warehouse. And that's a whole other thing. But to get right back to the creator economy, I am in this exact same place with you. I heard a statistic that is super exciting. Elon Musk put those satellites up. The internet's going to the whole world. I believe there's 2 billion people on the internet now. There'll be 4 billion in a few years. And the creator economy, anybody that's getting in it right now, is right at the very beginning to monetize all those. The more digital assets you have out there and the more venues you have your content going to, the more you'll be able to monetize and make money off that. So you are aligned with something that is right at the very beginning of a bloom cycle.
I believe it. And what I coach people is that if you have 10, 15, 20 years in law enforcement, in the military, or in nursing, then your experience in dealing with people alone, you can become a coach. You're ahead of someone that, and you've learned some lessons in your career or in your life that you can teach someone else, and you can turn that into a very lucrative career.
Correct. You know?
There's so many people, I call them hero coaches, but there's so many people that don't even realize the gold mine of their story that they're sitting on. Like your story, you've written several books around your story, but you know that your story is worth gold. And someday it can become an entire franchise, your IP is your story. And it can become an entire movie series, an entire book series, Netflix series from the things that you're creating from your story. And like you said, some of it may be fictionalized. Some of it you may have gathered from others. But the part of your story that's uniquely you, no one can take that away from you. No one can take away the years of experience that you have actually being in the field and dealing with people and dealing with, problem solving. That's the thing, problem solving.
Problem solving. And the creative aspect, somebody can't really compete. You're not competing with somebody. You've got your own franchise and idea and trademark, and it's got value. And I have talked to a few people in Hollywood, New York, about a TV series or
tremendous value
movie, and no contracts have been signed, but I have friends that have wrote a book and got a film deal. And I have a friend right now in negotiation, and those things take time. It's not, they do a lot of,
but if you stick with it, if you go on a 10-year trajectory and you stick with it, and all of a sudden people say, wow, you're an overnight success. you came out of nowhere. And they don't know that you've been writing for a decade. They don't know. Yes. They just don't know. No one sees you grinding away in silence for a decade. No one sees it.
Yeah.
Until they do.
It's almost like I'm looking at your arms there. You're pretty healthy. It's almost like walking
Thank
the
you.
gym and you're the skinny guy and you say, oh, that guy was born with some healthy genetics. No, he didn't see you in there at the gym and you've been in there for 10 years and you've been putting those wheels on, right? You put the wheels on and you go, oh, I got one wheel on each side. And then, it takes a year or two. I got two wheels on each side, And then they come in and think that you did that the first day. But I could tell by the way, looking at you,
Thank you.
you spent some time in the gym.
You know what's the greatest compliment that anyone can give me is the one you just gave me. I had a guy who's kind of buffed recently tell me, "You look really healthy." And that is the greatest compliment that anyone could give me. I enjoy when people ask me, "Are you a trainer?" I really enjoy that, and I say, "No, I've been doing push-ups in front of the mirror literally since I was 13, 14 years old in front of my mom's mirror, just doing push-ups and working out." But Patrick, I gotta go check on this boiler guy because he just went upstairs and I don't trust anybody. I don't have anything of value in my home. I just don't want him smelling my girlfriend's panties. So I'm gonna go. We will definitely continue this offline and in person when it gets warm. And
Yes.
unless you're traveling somewhere, then I'll connect with you in person and we'll continue. The conversation's not over. We'll do part two, part three,
Part
and
two,
everything.
part three.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
in for it. I'm in
Yes,
for
but
it.
everyone go to Amazon and get To Die a Hero by Joseph Patrick Phair. If you're a fan of that genre, if you like any type of law enforcement, if you like novels, nonfiction, if you're a reader, go get Small Town Cop, Big Time Crime, To Die a Hero, a novel from a former cop, Joseph Patrick Phair. Thank you so much for hopping on. I appreciate you, brother.
All right, family. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Everyone I interview, I've chosen for you guys because of their story. And I hope that you get some value every single time. If you did get value or just simply enjoyed the episode, please share the episode with someone that you know. If you know of a guest, a frontline hero that has an amazing story, something uplifting or a positive message, hit me up in the contact form of www.davidleith.com or DM me at Instagram at davidleith1. Subscribe to the show because I have some really phenomenal guests coming up in the next few weeks that you definitely don't want to miss. All right, one.